Living Forever. This is the instant inspiration. This is the thought for today. Thought for today, Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. Living Forever. Everyone likes to think they might live forever. They might live eternally. Jesus taught that, and the Bible teaches that, and the elixir of life is what people are looking for, and Ponce de Leon looking in Florida and everywhere for the fountain of youth. It is an eternal story, a fairy tale that mankind has had from time immemorial. However, living forever is just two words, and they mean nothing. Because in truth, we are living forever. Our soul, our spirit, never dies. Our mind is one that's a universal mind. I don't know that we have an individual mind, but our mind is always alive, always eternal. But let's take an illustration of what it means in our thinking to live forever. We watched a movie last night called Tuck Everlasting by Walt Disney. A very charming movie. The persons in it, the characters in it, were extremely well portrayed, delightfully portrayed, and maintained their character very thoroughly and very wonderfully throughout. The problem that we have when we think of living forever is we think that we will live forever in a changeable body, a changeable mind, a changeable world, and we will just go along with the changeability of the world and be harmonious. Because we all know it is not nice to be different. Because if any of us at any time are different in our life, we are ostracized by our community. If we are sick, we are ostracized. If we are very healthy and very well, we are ostracized. If we are fat, we're ostracized. If we're thin, we're ostracized. If we are anything other than the norm or the average, we are ostracized. Oh, well, if everybody's fat, then that's the norm. That's the norm. And you're not ostracized. So if you are skinny among people who are heavyweight, then you are ostracized because you're different. It doesn't mean the universal community. It shouldn't mean it, but it doesn't. So what does being living forever mean to any of us? We think it means living in a healthy body with nothing can harm us, nothing can hurt us, no illnesses, no disease, no ups, no downs, no happinesses, no sadnesses. In the movie itself, the people were not really sad. The father image in the movie, in explaining about living forever, being life everlasting, he tried to discourage the young lady for participating in it from one point of view only, and from the point of view of there's no change. There's no winter, there's no summer, there's no morning, there's no night. It's eternal day. And this is what our poets would like to have us believe in, eternal day. This is what our metaphysical poets, Ernest Holmes and his brother Fenwick Holmes, they wrote a beautiful Voice Celestial, a book poem of some 800 pages in poetry. It's a monstrous piece, and I've read it twice, and it's very good. It's very good. It's not my belief, but it's very good. But in there, they allowed the harmony and the joy and the music of their soul to come out in words. And the words oftentimes spelled out things, in my estimation, that were a little incorrect of what bliss means, of what this means. But of course, everyone is welcome to their own opinion of what these things mean. But to me, what it was saying was that we compare life eternal, we compare bliss We compare all these things to human relationships, to what we know of human. And this is all we can do because that's what we are. However, in my understanding, once you enter into bliss, once you enter into life, there's no comparison. You do not compare. You can't even explain it to anybody. You can't even define it to anybody because it is so magnificent. It's so beyond words, beyond definition. Well, in the movie, they have the family stopping to take a drink at a spring at the base of a great tree. And as they take a drink from the spring, they are elated because the water tastes so good and the water is so refreshing and it's so immediately enlivening. However, they don't know that. They feel good in drinking it, as we oftentimes feel good in drinking some water. But then things happened in their life. Even the horse went over and took a drink from the spring. And some neighbors thought the horse was a deer after they'd had many bottles of hooch. And so they shot the deer, that is, they shot the horse, and the horse didn't even flinch because it drank from that water, which made it eternal and made it untouchable. Now, this is interesting too. It was untouchable. And when the two boys were shown as being shot, the bullet went, and it stunned them. It made them lose their breath for a moment, which shouldn't have happened. But they wanted to make it human. And so they fell down. And they looked like they were injured. But you see, the Superman movie does it better. Because in the Superman movie, the bullet hits his chest and bounces off. You know, no way to penetrate him. And so they were playing the game half human and half divine. And it was charming. It was very charming. But the boy wanted the girl, and the girl was very attached to the boy. And they ran here and there and did all these things and had just a great old time. And then he tried to encourage her to drink from the well. At first, when he first met her, he said, don't. Because he was not really sure living forever was the greatest thing in the world. He was doing it, but they had done it just as a surprise. They did not know that water was going to give them life eternal. Well, we are like that. We have the well within us of life eternal. And when we drink of that well, then all hell breaks loose. We no longer judge other people. And that's our commonality. That's what we have been so accustomed to doing all of our life. We no longer tell another person how to live. We no longer tell ourselves how to live. We live in a certain innocence that's hard to describe. It's an innocence that just be yourself and have fun. Because the young man certainly did that, didn't he? And no one told him what to do. The father said, don't go to town because you might be recognized. But he was only saying that from them. But he didn't say, I order you not to go to town on pain of death because they couldn't kill him. So his one son did go to town. But anyhow, you see, the difficulty that we have in such a movie as this, which is extremely well done, but the difficulty we have is that when immortality or life everlasting takes place within the body, then the body, if the body is unkillable, you know, if the body is untouchable, if the body, you wouldn't have to eat, but they enjoyed it. You wouldn't have to drink water, but they enjoyed it. You wouldn't have to breathe air, but they enjoyed it. Really. And you could just lay down and sleep for whatever you wish. But they don't need to. because the body doesn't need rejuvenation, doesn't need this added, but they enjoyed it. That was part of being the human race. And so that in itself was one of the little errors in the picture, because it makes you think that even though you have life eternal, you still want to eat. Where are they going to work? Where are they going to get a job? Where are they going to get money to buy the motorcycle? Where are they going to get, they lived in a very special area. But if they're so all-fired, illumined, and living in this perfect body, why don't they just speak their word that this is an invisible part of the world, and it's untouched, you know, because they like it. And then another aspect here, and this is an aspect that shows the humanness so seriously. They had a secret. And because they had a secret, as though they were the protectors of that information, because they had this secret, they felt that they had to keep the world from knowing about it. And the very thought that they had the secret opened it up to others, made it known through a very unexpected way. And so the protagonist, or antagonist, whatever you call him, the guy against it, the antagonist, was there as not an evil man, but as a man who was after his own end. And he really didn't care what he had to do to get it. It's very interesting. Now, you would think that that man who was chasing them would have tried to find the well, tried to find the source, and that would be the first thing, because if he did that, he'd be invincible. But he didn't. His first idea was, I'm going to make money off of this. I'm going to sell this elixir to those at a very high price. I was thinking, as I was walking the path this morning, if I had the bottle of that water, and I would go to every wealthy man in the world, every wealthy woman, every person who was extremely successful in their business financially, you know, and maybe Billy Graham and a few others, you know, and go visit them, somehow get to visit them, and have this little vial with me, you know, and drop a few drops into their cup of water or into their drinking that they're going to drink, you know, and have them live forever. And live forever without worrying about their body or something, just applying themselves to their business, because they're good businessmen. Like the best of the Fortune 500 businesses, you know, that sort of thing. Herb, why would you do something like that? Well, if you gave immortality to people who were of high quality mental attitude and high moral standards and so forth, they could continue being a powerhouse and continue being an example for whoever would see them. And of course, having them live forever would give them a little extra edge too, which is be interesting. But that's not our gift. That's not our privilege to go doing things like that. If you were to live forever, what would you do? If you were to live forever, what sort of a life would you live? Would you live a life of, for instance, if you had known of this special well, would you keep it secret? Would you think that that's something that you have to keep from people, because if people know about it, they're allowed to misuse it? Well, that's not the way our religious leaders and philosophers tell us. They say the secret eternal well is within every man, and all you have to do is go there and find it. And like the three gods, you know, trying to hide where man's true identity is, And so he finally decided to hide it deep within him because he'd never looked there. And so if these people, if you and I and everyone were able to experience this life everlasting, what would we do? What would we do? Would you be, of course, now this would be asking on the relative level, but would you be happy here on this earth, living lifetime after lifetime and everybody dying off around you? Would you, you'd go through new relationships constantly, you know, and friendships and so on. Now, and you remain young. Well, now, I would like to share something with you that I don't believe anyone else has mentioned up to now. And that is that every day of your life, you meet people who are immortal. Of course, everyone is, but basically you meet live people right now who are immortal. Neighbors, friends, business people, relatives, whomever. Now, you don't know they're immortal because they outpicture to you mortality. They appear to be like anybody else. They're not, but they appear that way. Now, does that mean they are old or young? No. You look at Ronald Reagan. Now, if you didn't know what age he was, you would think that he was much younger. You look at Dodie, Dorothea, and you look at her, especially on the picture from there, from the car. Yeah. She doesn't look like an 86-year-old lady. She looks like a lady who is perhaps, what would you say, 50 or thereabouts. And dynamically, when she was playing her game, then she acted a little older, but like a little old lady, but basically she didn't do that. Now, you see, we have them all around us all the time. When Dodie takes off her mask and becomes Dorothea, the spiritual master, then she doesn't act like an old lady. When she puts on the Dodie bit, then she's just a little Dodie, a doddering individual, and that's the game she wants to play. And we all play games from time to time. But every moment of our life, we are meeting people who are immortal. At this table, it could be. In our group of students, it could well be many times. In the people we meet walking down the street, it could be very often. You don't know, and you can't judge. That is to judge that they are or they are not. Both are judgments. You can't judge, because the minute you judge, what you're doing is you're saying your eyes are clear or not. So, should you want to experience life everlasting, living forever, should you want to do that, you can't have it. And the reason you can't have it is because you already got it. You already have it, but you're not willing to recognize that you have it. You're not willing to recognize that you are everything right now. You're not willing to recognize that you not only quite likely are, but you definitely are one of the spiritually illumined beings. Now, a spiritually illumined being can play other games, can play the game of being human, can play the game of ordinariness, and that's fine. But just watch for the little evidences in the people around you, how illumined they are. And when you do, if you can conceive of them being illumined, then you are. And that's the big and beautiful point. Now, if you have the intelligence to be here at the monastery, and you have the intelligence to know that our philosophy is okay, and you have the intelligence to live it in every possible way that you can, you should be the happiest person on earth. Because what did these kids have to do? Were they, had the jobs? Did they have meditations they have to do? Did they have church services they had to do? Did they have meetings they had to go to? Did they have people they had to teach because they wanted to learn from them?
Making order.
Making order, yes, that's true too. But, or a job, you know.
Yeah.
Did they have any of these things? No. Did, how was their house? Okay.
It was
a pleasant
unique.
House. Unique, very unique, but pleasant, but not clean or dirty. Mm-hmm. In fact, you looked at the place where the clocks were showing, you know, and they were dusty. And they never looked at the clock. Because the clock, time meant nothing to them, because all time is now. Interesting, huh? Yeah. See, there's a lot of these little features that we teach, which are demonstrated in here, and a lot that we teach that are not demonstrated in here.
Mm.
Now, how would you like to be 14 or 17 all your life? That'd be kind of nice. And just be a happy, free, no demands on you, no desire on you to do anything else, just to be yourself. How would you like that?
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, that'd be kind of fun. Yes, it would. But don't forget this. Just because you have a 17-year-old body or a 14-year-old body, it doesn't mean that, and then you're 104 years old like he was, that doesn't mean that during those 104 years you didn't learn something. You see, now, he acted like a child of 17 because that was the age that his body was. But his mind was not that age. His mind was 104 years old. His mind was illumined with much information and things. And that's one thing they didn't show too well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very true. It's very true. And I think this is very important for us to be aware of, that should we live forever, though our bodies would remain youthful, our minds would grow and become expansive, and we'd be aware of what we already know, which is good stuff. Are you ready to enter into living forever? And I would say no. And the reason I say no is if I say to you one little thing, your answer has to be no. And I say to it, can you say that I feel good and believe it? Can you say I have no problems and believe it? Can you say I know all things right now and believe it? I see. They do. They don't, you don't ask them the question. They do know all things. They do know who they are, that they, their body is perfect and so forth. They know that. They're immortal. They know that. They know that. You understand that? They know it. It's not a matter of proving it to them. It's not a matter of them becoming aware of it. They know it. And so everything they do is predicated on that information. Now, can we know it? Sure we can. But are we going to be like them when we know it? Are we going to think it's a secret? Huh. Don't shake your head so quick. Don't shake your head so quick. Remember the Egyptian Book of the Dead? Remember all the ancient mysteries of the Rosicrucians and of the Freemason Lodge and all that other kind of stuff?
Esoteric.
All the esoteric stuff and hidden.
And it still is.
And why? Because they think people are not ready for it. And perhaps they're not. But how could they judge whether people are not ready for it? Because if they think people are not ready for it, they're not ready. And I'm not speaking against them. But whatever we think is what we experience. And if we think people are not ready for something, then we're not ready. If your mother says to a child, you're not ready for sex yet, then she's not ready. Because sex is not a physical act. It's a mental act. And when our mind is clear on the fact of love and sharing and blessing and stuff, then great. The physical act of sex is like eating up a piece of chicken or something like that, you know, really. And we should always be master. But now, the moment that you are ready, the moment that you are ready to not judge yourself, or not judge somebody else, or not judge the world. I mean, that's just one step. The moment that you can even begin to think about that, begin to recognize how important that is, then you're looking the right direction. You know? But it's wonderful. It's wonderful. We have to really be in charge and be untouched, one-pointed, unpossessed, non-judgmental. These are the vital keys to our immortality. We are immortal, but we would be like our friend the Tux. They're immortal, but they're ashamed of it, they're afraid of it, and they think it's their secret. And you too. You think it's your secret. When you're thinking about spiritual healing, you're thinking about spiritual awareness, you're thinking about all these things, and it's not your secret. It's not a secret. It may be locked away, but it's not a secret. Yeah. Many great writers have written about the keys to the kingdom. And these people have done beautiful works and opened up doors for people. But it doesn't mean anything. Because if I open the door for you and you don't go through, what good is it? If I put the water before you and you don't drink, what good is it? Always, when we get down to the last nibbin, we have to do the act. Living forever would be fascinating. And the things that I have said this morning to you in these last 27 minutes approximately, they're just the surface of things that we are talking about every day here. Now, I think living at the monastery should be a joyous occasion, a happy time. Everyone should be in high state of happiness. I think that living at the monastery should be an illuminating thing where we feel raised up in our consciousness and lifted up in our awareness that the brilliance, the glory of who we are is shining forth. I think that living in the monastery should be a people walking the same path together thing. And that's kind of nice. Now, for me, that's what this monastery is. Now, if that's that way for you, that's good too. But for me, that's what it is. And we have a statement somewhere around here. Obviously not very important, but this is a temple of the living God. Everyone who walks upon these monastery grounds is instantly healed. Now, that's not very important, so we have tucked it away someplace in the back closet or whatever. And that should be right out here, boldly, wonderfully stated. But it doesn't match our decor, and so we put it away. And it doesn't match the decor of your body, so you put it away. And this morning, this morning as I got up, I was sleeping on the floor, as I always do, because for me it's comfortable. I lay down, I could be on the softest bed, and I couldn't be more comfortable, because I'm out, poof. But this morning I woke up at 12:30, and so I got up, and I felt perfect. No crick in my back, I didn't even think of my body. I just got up and stood up, you know, and did my things and so on. And I felt great. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back to bed because, you know, it's 12:30. And I laid down for a moment, wasn't tired. I sat in the chair for about 10 minutes. I wasn't tired. So I thought, well, let's take my walk. So I took the walk, and I took the umbrella along, but the rain had stopped. And then the clouds all went away and made a beautiful starry sky. And I thought, sure, I'll bring the umbrella and get a starry sky. So then, as I was coming back from my walk, I noticed the path got dimmer, and I couldn't see it as clearly. And I looked up, and it was all cloudy. The clouds had come back in. And I thought, well, you don't need to rain. But it didn't. And as I walked along, in the beginning, as I climbed up the first hill there, I was huffing and puffing. But when I got to the top, I had used the flashlight to go up the hill. When I got to the top, I sat in the prayer seat there and meditated and put all you guys in my prayers and in my good thoughts. And then I had the flashlight off, and I'm looking around, clear as a bell. Could see the pathways, could see everything. Just my eyes acclimated to the darkness so perfectly. And so I walked the whole path without the flashlight. And the clouds came and went, and this and that. But the entire path, it was just like a beacon before me, or just like the little lights along the edge of the path. Really nice. And whenever anything was needing my attention was drawn to it. It says, can you see the darkness in the road? That means there's a rut. Go around it, you know. But, you see, I felt so good. I felt so wonderful. And then when I came back, I went over and took a swim, and I took my jacuzzi, which is up to 93 now, or 4. one degree a day it goes up. But it was very good, too. And then I finished off and came back over and worked on the chapters here for the book. I just got the 5 more to go, and I'll be done proofing that, and I'll do that today. So that's great. And I thought, yep, this is a great world. It's a wonderful world. It's a world in which I could live forever in this wonderful body, because I feel good about me. I feel good about my body. And I thought, now some people were talking about illness. Well, talk about health. Talk about health. Let that be the main idea in your mind. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be checked, because I tell everybody, if you feel sick, go to the doctor so he can tell you that you're not. But that's what you want to go there for. You don't want to go there to get a diagnosis that you're sick. It's not the Krankenspiel. It's the Gesundheitshaus, yeah. And so you go into the house of the whole and pure, and you let the doctors reveal to you that you're pure and whole and good. And this is what I say to you today. Living forever? Most people do not want to live forever, because they have not created a body that they wanted to live in forever. And that includes you guys. You don't want to live forever. The day will come, perhaps, that you might change your mind, but at the moment, you're like the girl in the movie. She saw the emotional feeling of her mother toward her grandmother. She saw how the Tucks lived a rather relaxed, laid-back life, because time was nothing. She saw how her father and mother sincerely cared about her, and she loved them. She was raised by them. She loved them. She was aware of their strictness, but their strictness was a demonstration of love to her. And for her to live forever, even though her mother said, I'd like to keep you a little girl forever, she didn't mean that. You know, she wanted time to go on. She wanted the movement of life. And so the girl could not possibly have consciously done that. You see, the young man in the event, he married, had 2 kids. If he wanted it for his wife and kids, he should have given it to them just like he got it, without knowing anything about it. And then they would live forever, and they would have a beautiful relationship. Because when he told them, they had to make a decision. Is this sacrilegious, or is this right? Mm-hmm. And the people of the earth are not used to having people go around naked. And so whenever people go around naked, they think that they're incorrect, and they think that they're immoral, they think that they are indecent and improper, all those words they like to use for it. Well, that's the same thing with living forever. It's immoral, indecent, improper, because it's not what society is accustomed to.
Exactly.
And so as we live our path here in our beautiful ways, we should not expect society to eagerly clamber onto the bandwagon. We are on our own bandwagon. We are on our own belief. And we don't want the world to beat a path to our doorstep. We want to beat our own path to our doorstep, go our own path, go our own inner way, and live in the wholeness that we are. And when we have, physician, healed thyself, when we have first taken care of ourselves, then we can reach out and see the whole world through our eyes. And you know what we'll see?
What we are.
Perfection.
What I am, perfection. If I'm.
If you are perfect, you'll see the world perfect. And needing nothing. And isn't that a lovely gift that we could give to the world? So let's work on ourselves now, seeing ourselves perfect, and stop feeling sorry for ourselves. Every one of you are feeling sorry for yourself, and that's why you're putting on these games that you're putting on, including you, Ellen. And that's not very beneficial to you. Rather than playing a game of feeling sorry for yourself and living in bodies that are less than perfect and living in minds that are less than relaxed and peaceful, quit. Go do something else. You'd be further ahead. You follow me? Ellen loves to fly. But when she lost confidence in flying because her instructor was not available when she wanted him, she lost her interest in flying. Will she ever take it up again? Who knows? But the big thing is, if she had not lost her confidence, if Mark had been her instructor all the way, she would probably be having a fleet of planes and just enjoying herself thoroughly. Yeah. Wonderful world. Thank you for letting me share with you this morning.
Thank you, Herb.
I love you very much.
I love you. Thank you.